I really hate my dentist. Dentist yelled at me for not flossing. Flossing. So I bought floss, and I started flossing, and now I've got floss stuck in my teeth. I can't get the damn piece of floss out, along with corn and a lot of other stuff up there. I'm walking around with like floss string hanging out of my mouth. Look like a walking tampon.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
A walking tampon, I say.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the, come on, you can say it. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Welcome to the program. My name is indeed Ron Van Dam. They call me the walking tampon. Yes, yes I am. Oh, yes I am. Oh, yes I am. Don't try to take that away from me as well. Come on. Hey, good to be with you. Welcome to the program, as I just said. By the way, I've got to tell you something. You are an amazing person. I don't know you personally. I don't think. Maybe I do. I don't know. But you are, I don't know how you do it. I don't know, the way that you walk, the way that you hold your head up so much higher than the rest of your body, the way you consume liquids, you are just, you're just wonderful. The way that you talk to people, the way that you relate, how you have caring in your face, you are, you're amazing. You're amazing. The way that you touch, the senses that you have are phenomenal. I don't know how you do it. It must be the way you were brought up. The way your gait, the way that you walk. I don't know about your gait. I don't know what that means. I don't know what gait means. For some reason, the way you walk is your gait. I don't know why. Why do we use words over and over again? There's so many different words you can use for things, yet some words have double meanings, and I don't understand why they would. Why don't you just make up a new word? Did you ever have anybody garnish your wages? I hope you haven't, unless you're divorced or something, or you owe money to a credit card company. They'll garnish your wages, which means your wages are your wages, they'll take money away from it. They'll take it off. They will make your wages less. That's when they garnish your wages. That's one definition of garnish. Garnish also means to add, to put extra things on top of things, like garnish your dinner or garnish your steak. Put a piece of parsley on top. You're adding to it when you garnish. You're adding. Yet, when you're got wages involved, you're taking away. One stupid word means two opposite things. This has got to stop. This has got to stop. Webster, the guy who wrote the dictionary, also the TV show about the little black kid, both of them say this is ridiculous. Use another word. Make up another word. You can't have one word mean opposite things. And we do that in the English language. because we're lazy. We don't want to come up with new stuff. So we use words and we say, how can we confuse everybody in the world? Let's take the same word and give it opposite definitions. We're just lazy with words. You know what we're also lazy about? Naming streets. We're lazy with that. It's like almost every town and city across America has a Washington Street. I mean, I know we're honoring the first president, but man, lay off. You're naming streets after him. You got him on currency. You got him on a dollar bill. You got him on all kinds. He's on every piece of currency, my God. It doesn't matter what it is. This place is just showing up all over the place. Washington Street. Washington slept everywhere. He's a fucking whore. I mean, he slept in my bed last week. Guy couldn't stay in a room. Traveled a lot. Name a mountain after him, Mount Washington. This guy's really, although I don't know if he's got an airport. Isn't that odd? He doesn't have an airport. Only the newer presidents have airports. No, he didn't have an airport, I don't believe. I don't think there's a Washington airport. Well, there's an airport in Washington. They named the capital of the country they named after him. And then they also gave him a state as well. It's Washington guy, man. It's just getting on my nerves. Everywhere I turn, there's a Washington involved. Every town's got a Washington Street. Every town has a Main Street, which makes sense, because the Main Street would be the Main Street. That's the definition of the street. I get that. You always know where Main Street is. Where's your store? It's on Main Street. Okay, I'm assuming it's in the center of your town or city, because Main Street's always like smack dab in the middle of it, in the downtown area of the state or whatever, of the city or the town. We know where Main Street. You never find Main Street. Where's Main Street? It's over in the corner somewhere. How can you do that? It should be the Main Street. Every town has an Elm Street. We name streets after trees for some reason. I don't know why. They're streets. They're not trees. You don't go street picking. You go apple picking. You go from trees. What is that with the trees all over the streets? That's what we do. And then every town has an Oak Street. Got to have an Oak Street. You don't have an Oak Street in your town, it's not official. You don't have a town. Don't call that. You can't call that a town. If you don't have an Oak Street, you don't have a town. Sorry. In the city of Brockton, which is nearby where we do the podcast, it's a city of about 100,000 people. And some of them can read. And, that hurt. In the city of Brockton, they love the word Belmont. And there was probably a general Belmont, I guess. I mean, we don't name streets or things after people unless they were general in the military. Otherwise, it's not a lot of Bob streets going on. You know, Bob was a fine man. Let's name a street after him. No, we don't do that. Some guy Belmont, I don't know. There's Belmont Cleaners. There's Belmont Fishery. There's Belmont Meat Company. There's Belmont Street, Belmont Avenue, Belmont Court. And there's probably other Belmonts I'm not even familiar with. Lay off the Belmont shit, will you? Enough with the Belmont. I'm just saying. Just saying. Just pointing things out. It's what I do. I'm a pointer outer. I point things out. Hey, look. I point.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Sounds like somebody needs to learn to make better choices.
Hey, that's not nice. Hey, I got a question for you.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
You know, one of the most interesting... Thank you for the nice fade out. One of the most interesting pieces of clothing ever devised by man or woman or whoever designs this crap, I think Washington did, is the necktie. It's been around for a long time, and it's for men, not for women. Women, you can't wear this. It's not for you. For once, this isn't for you. The necktie, I think, was invented by a woman who said, let's take the men and design a piece of clothing that can actually choke them. What article of clothing can serve the purpose of an actual noose around their fucking necks? These were angry, angry women that came up with this. And then in order to choke men and to make them wear something around their neck, which is the closest to suffocation and death as you can come in the clothing industry, the women said, let's make it various patterns and things like that so that they'll be attractive and also be close to death and asphyxiation. And they invented the necktie, and they insist that men wear them, and then they laugh. They go, hey, look, we got them to wear a noose around their neck, and we yell at them when they don't. This is so cool. They're laughing at you. They design something that can kill you. And they make you wear it. And then men, in their men kind of way, took the noose, call it the noose, and they started making their own designs, like naked women with their legs raised. I've got to get a job where I don't have to talk. Perhaps a male prostitute. How about that? I can just shut up. No, but then you got to whisper things. I know. You look so nice. You look so sexy. And I'm not good at whispering either, necessarily. Anyway, men designed ties with naked women on them and to get back at the women that designed the ties. And then they also design ties. Men wear ties with Christmas trees on them when it's Christmas time, which is about the lamest thing ever. When a man dresses up and wears something stupid on a tie, it's just, it's not dressy when you have a Christmas tree on your tie. It's stupid. You're a walking billboard of schmuck is what you are. So women, good job, man. Good job, women. You got the man to formally wear a noose around their neck that can get tighter and tighter and tighter. Very good. Well done. I applaud you. You achieved greatness with your invention of the necktie. Congrats.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing?
Nicely done. Nicely done. You were really nicely done. Very nice. Speaking of prostitutes, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Well, we've got one on the show on Monday. Hope you can join us, unless this is a repeat program, in which case there is nothing going on Monday of any consequence involving a prostitute whatsoever. But hey, you know, whenever I do a show that's based on some type of sex thing, the ratings go up. It never fails. It just never fails. It's what people do. You can't go wrong. Okay. All right. I got to tell you something. This show is not that easy. I've got to follow certain rules, and so do you.
This is the Ron Van Dam Show. Thank you for coming. Your waiter will be along shortly. Please be advised that the Ron Van Dam Show has been designated as a non-smoking area. Please watch your step while boarding the Ron Van Dam Show, as contents may have shifted during travel. In clinical studies, the Ron Van Dam Show has not been shown to reduce cholesterol in laboratory animals. Exits are located to the rear on the left and right sides of the auditorium. The sea bass is steamed and served with a white truffle risotto. Illinois residents add 5% sales tax. Shake before serving. If dizziness or swelling occur, stop using the Ron Van Dam Show immediately. Proper ID is required. No cover charge after 10 p.m. Moo. Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show may require you to lift objects weighing 15 pounds or more. Please remain seated until the Ron Van Dam Show comes to a complete stop.
Listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too, but sometimes he says bad words.
It's not true. I don't say bad words. Not true. Went to the movies recently, to the movie theaters. Went to a movie theater chain called Showcase Cinemas. They do a fine job. They have seats and they show the movie and you sit there and you watch it. I have no problems with movie theaters. I only have problems with the people that go to the movie theaters. Everybody that goes to a movie theater is disrespectful of me. They all annoy me, every single one of them. There are many ways to annoy me in a movie theater. The best way to annoy me is to talk constantly through the film. I can't stand that. Why would somebody talk while there's a movie on the screen? That's really... I will basically smack people. I know you're supposed to enjoy popcorn and stuff at a movie theater, but don't eat it near me, because it's the loudest food ever invented. It's like that bubble wrap. It's just, when you eat popcorn, the sound of you chewing the kernels resonates throughout the land. It's just, wear a muzzle or something. When I'm at a restaurant, I don't have total strangers eating down the back of my neck. I mean, they're at least like a table away. In a movie theater, everybody is like right on top of you. It's go away. Go away. I don't like strangers sitting next to me. I don't like sitting in a movie theater that's crowded and some smelly dude or some spandex-laden woman sits their ass right down next to you in the next chair, where you actually share the armrest. That's way too familiar for... I won't share an armrest with somebody unless I first had sex with them or unless they've bought me dinner. That is like way too close to me for 2 hours. It's a long time to be way too close to a stranger. Like, we're armpit to armpit, and that is disgusting. If you're going to sit that close to me, then you must touch my crotch. It's a regulation. Of course, the assumption is that you want your crotch touched by these people who are sitting next to you, on practically in your lap. I sat next to a guy a couple of movies ago I don't know if he was overweight or underweight, because I didn't really turn around and look at him, but some embodiment sat next to me, and it was a man. I don't like to sit that close to men. There are no circumstances on the planet in which I care to sit that close to a man. My closest friends, of which I have really none, except for you, my closest friends, I won't even sit that close to them to the point where our elbows are touching or our forearms are touching. That's like, I will not do that. I mean, that is like way too close. And movie theater is the only place in the world that you sit so close to strangers and actually touch them by mistake. I'm so conscious of not touching them by mistake. It's awful. So this guy, or it could have been like a very manly woman, sits next to me, and through the whole movie, this is what I hear. The person isn't sleeping, they're breathing. This is how they breathe. This is, if they didn't make that noise and didn't breathe, they'd be dead. This is how they live. They live making that noise. Now, I've had asthma before, I think once in some time in my life. I snore a little bit, I've been told by a lot of people. And the phrase that I usually hear is, shut up, you asshole. That's how I know I snore. But this guy was, when he breathed, you could hear every breath. That was, and then I started hearing myself breathe, like, because his breathing was so pronounced. You're driving me nuts. Don't ever make me conscious of the fact that I'm breathing. That's a horrible thing to do. That's worse than having a song drilled into your head that you're aware of your own breathing. This guy made me aware of he had patterns going on. I couldn't take it. So I got up and I changed seats. It's just, did you ever sit next to a person of the opposite sex in a movie theater, a total stranger? You're just as close to them as if it were your husband, your wife, or your date. And yet this person is a total stranger, but they're sitting like right next to you. And then you sit there and you fantasize, what if this worked out a little bit? What if we're sitting next to each other watching the movie and something comes of this? I don't know this person. I don't know their name. But what if, you know, you do that? Now, here's this damn song again. Did you ever sit next to a really attractive stranger in a movie theater, like right next to them, almost where your bodies are melding together, yet you don't know this person at all? Yeah. 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 Anyway. The chairs in the movie theaters now, in most movie theaters, not the cheap ones, but in these big deluxe movie theaters, the chairs are like better than the chairs that you have in your home. By the way, if you ever want to find out how you're doing in life, what your comfort level is, if you're well off financially, if the chairs in the movie theater are better than the chairs in your living room, you're not living too well. If you go to a hotel on a vacation and you stay the night and your hotel room is like a luxury suite compared to where you sleep in your house, you're not doing too well. You need to change things up a little bit. Get a decorator, use an accent wall, buy a new chandelier, something. Dress up your home somehow so that the stuff that you have when you go out isn't better than what you have at home. Do you ever rent a car because your car broke down or something and the car rental is like far better than your actual car? What a horrible feeling that is. I'm driving a little shitbox. This is wonderful. this is a wonderful car rental here. Now, and then the car rental is up and they repair your car and you don't want to give up the rental car. I don't want to give this up. This has been wonderful. Now I got to drive my little shitbox around. Oh, God. Another smack in the face as to where you are. It's if you have a taste of the better life, it's not empowering. It's depressing. It's do you ever go over to somebody's house and your friend's wife is like much prettier than yours? And I mean, you love your wife and all that, but your friend is married to a hot model. And you have these thoughts that you're not supposed to have. You're just not supposed to have them. I mean, it's the grass is always greener on the other side. Who came up with that phrase? The grass isn't always greener on the, unless you're on the other side. Do you know the person on the other side of the grass, of the fence of the grass, is saying that about you?
Why would they say it about me? My life is so normal and so, actually, it's so horrible.
No, other people want to be you because their grass ain't so green.
It's true. It's not how pretty your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend is. It's their personalities. And sometimes, you know, the grass is greener, but you got the greener grass and you don't even know it.
Yeah, I'm serious, man. You don't believe me, do you? You don't believe anything I say. You really don't. I'm starting to piss me off.
You know, I sit here like for almost an hour every weekday and you're starting to piss me off because you don't believe what I'm saying. I don't know. Look, the least that I can do is make your life better. And the way that I do that is I bring in an expert. It's very important. He reads horoscopes. He's Skip Starchild. And I'm telling you, this man is dead on when it comes to reading. Listen to this. Dead on. On. He's on.
Greetings, fellow planet travelers. Kip Starchild here with your monthly New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. Let's see what the stars have planned for you. Aquarius, your life lately is the result of a lot of really questionable choices. I don't see that changing anytime soon, but I do see a lot of Mexican prison food. Pisces, watch out for your evil twin. Not the one you already killed, the one you weren't aware of. Aries, in your endless search for meaning, remember to check between the couch cushions. Taurus, you've got a career change coming. You probably weren't thinking about it and didn't know about it, but your bosses and coworkers certainly have. Remember, friolators get really hot. Gemini, bad sushi means a good lawsuit. Mazel tov! Cancer, chances are pretty good that you are going to get hit by a bus or a derailed train. Leo, don't stand too close to Cancer. Libra, romance is in the air for you. So is a raging STD, thanks to Miss or Mr. Right. Or both. Virgo, start saving now for your dream vacation. Looks like the money will go to bailing out your quote-unquote Uncle Freddy again, but it's best to plan ahead. Sagittarius, exposure to a leaky microwave at a chemical plant will give you superpowers. Or some kind of really bad tumor, not exactly sure which one right now. Sorry. Capricorn, you are about to make two new best friends, tequila and despair. So stock up on limes and Kleenex. That's your New England Broadcasting Horoscopescape. I'm Kip Starchild. Until next time, peace.
Wow. That is so accurate. I can't believe it. Phew.
Wow. Whenever Skip's on the show, I take stock. I buy stock, as a matter of fact, whenever Skip's on the show. Speaking of buying stock, I'm not talking about buying stock. I want to speak to a guy named Soman. He's a younger guy. He has written a series of books, and if you have kids, you're probably aware of these books. It's called Good and Evil, I believe it is. I'm not a kid, so I don't read books. Books are something you read either if you're extremely intelligent or if you're a kid. If you're a kid, you have to read because that's part of what you have to do. If you're an adult, you read because you want to read. There's nothing in between. The series is called The School for Good and Evil, and his books are actually being turned into a movie. He's a guy that went to Harvard and then went to a film school, and the man's like incredibly successful. Let's speak to Soman right now. I don't know how he does it. Soman Chainani joins us now. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Pleasure you're having you here in the New England area. As we spoke a little bit earlier, you're familiar with the area. You spent quite a few years at the Harvard location, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time at Cambridge. That's sort of where the whole series kind of started, because my interest in fairy tales began when I was, you know, going to school there. And I love coming back every once in a while. Boston's one of my favorite cities.
Great. And then after going to Harvard, I understand that the Museum of Fine Arts had a film program, and you had joined that with Columbia University. Is that right?
Yep, I got a master's in film directing and writing. And so, you know, I always thought I was going to work in film.
Uh-huh.
And I just happened to come up with an idea that was too big for film, in this School for Good and Evil idea, and I realized that it would be better served as books. You know, and I'd done so much writing in college and just in my life in general that I thought it would be sort of a fascinating challenge to see if I could take what I thought was principally, you know, a big movie idea and see if I could actually create a whole world out of it. And so that was sort of the challenge to myself.
And then, as fate has it, what comes around goes around, and now we're talking movie, actually, so there you go.
It's a funny thing. Hollywood has changed so much in the sense of they don't really want you to peddle them with original ideas. They want you to bring them something that's already in existence in some form. So, you know, when I brought them the original idea, they were like, and then when you bring it to them as a book, they're like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever, because it's there. It's like they can touch it. If they can't touch it, they can't see who they're making it for. It's quite tricky. So in this case, you know, it worked out better. And I think that'll sort of be my strategy from here on out, is to do stuff in books first. It's only because it also helps make the movie better if you've already, you know, worked so hard on developing the world.
Now, the series is called The School for Good and Evil, and I understand this had become a series, and your third and final volume is out. Had you originally intended it to be a series?
Yeah, I mean, I always knew that, because the whole goal of the series was to sort of deal with these binary terms that we all think we know, especially kids, like good and evil in the first book. The second book, I wanted to look at boys and girls, the idea of, like, you know, how we sort of crystallize gender to when we teach kids about it. And then old and young in the third book. And so I wanted to just take these concepts and play with them.
Yeah.
And so I always knew there would be three.
So what I think you did was you took what people expect from something like that, and you twisted it around a little bit to make it your own. And I guess it caught on big time, because we're talking countries all around the world that have found interested in the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing is when I write, I just write for myself. So I don't even know if it's a kid's book. I don't know if it's an adult book. Uh-huh. I just, you know, tell the story as I see it. And in this case, it is a children's book at the core story level, but it is quite subversive. And I think a lot of our readers are adults and older, you know, older teenagers and people in their 20s and things like that, because it takes all the fairy tales that you might know from childhood and Disney stories and just completely blows them up, you know, in a sort of calculated way. And so, you know, the whole idea is that by the end of the series, you don't know what good and evil means anymore. Boy and girl mean different things to you. Old and young mean different things to you. It's just making you question these constructs that we've sort of established in life.
Which is kind of really where we are in life. All those things really do meld together. And in previous generations, they were like definite splits. So it's interesting.
Completely, you know, or you just look at Disney and like how black and white good and evil are in those stories.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that, you know, they've kind of sanitized all the original tales. The one, you know, they've drained, sometimes even completely messed up the meaning of some of these original stories. Like The Little Mermaid is a tale about a girl who disobeys, in the Disney movie, disobeys her parents, disobeys her friends, goes to the circus, chases a guy she knows absolutely nothing about, and ends up marrying him by giving up her voice, and he marries her, and the movie ends, and he's never heard her speak.
Right.
You know, and that's supposed to be the happy ending. And in the original story, she dies for all those decisions.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I think, the one that really sort of galled me when I thought, okay, like, how did we get here? You know, and why are we selling all these dolls of this princess who has no voice? You know?
Interesting. So, so there you are. So you write the first book, and I mean, you had a background with it in school and training in it and all that. But how did that become so explosively popular? There are billions of people who write books, and then nothing really ever happens to them. What was it that caught on here?
I think there's two things. One, I think the voice is different from most books. I think it's quite, what's the word, edgy for a kids or teen series. I think it's edgier, and I think it's different. You know, it's just, you know, I didn't read kids' books growing up very much.
Yeah.
You know, so I didn't know what they were supposed to sound like. And it was only once I published, and then everyone was like, this is so different. And I'm like, why is it so different? And then I looked, and once you start seeing other kids' books in that kind of warm, gentle, friendly tone, this is not it.
Yeah.
You know, this is very much like the fairy tales of old, which is dark, you know, and sort of hard-edged, and I think, and jagged, you know, and I think that's what
interesting
kids have responded to, because they feel slightly unsafe reading it, you know, they don't know what's going to happen. It reminds me a little bit of how I watch Game of Thrones, you know, like, I feel like anxious the whole time, and I think they have that reading this, and I think, you know, the people die all the time in this series, and I think they really respond to that.
How did you self-publish to begin with, or were you picked up by a publisher?
I was picked up by a publisher. We took the proposal for three books to Harper, and you know, they sort of saw the vision for the whole series. So you know, I had the sort of opposite problem, which was that I had a day and date for publication already set before I ever started writing.
Cool.
So there was a lot of pressure, you know, which was it was not the easiest way to write a first book, but, you know, you don't complain and you take what you can get. Yeah.
No, I mean, to get a publisher and not having published before is amazing. It must have been that grandiose to that publishing company. It's wonderful. And now we're talking film, and this is where your real expertise comes in from your education. I know you had done some independent films, so you were... I mean, now you can really relate to that and make it that much better, where so you're actually involved in this process where other publishers, other writers might just take a back seat and just let it fly in the hands of the motion picture industry. But I think here you have the input.
Absolutely. I think the great thing about publishing is they really welcome your input and let you in, you know, and I think it's different from the movie world where it's so corporate, you know, it's so safe because of how much money is on the line.
Yeah.
I think with publishing, they encourage risk-taking. And once it works, like once the first book works, they really gave me free reign to really go deeper and deeper and make the world bigger and bigger. So I think we just have some great cool things on this site. Like we have this website that I think is the best of any kid series out there where... you know, kids can create their own avatars, join the school, there's like tests, there's games, there's a text adventure game, there's forums, you know, there's a million ways for the kids to get involved, and we just have thousands and thousands of kids every day hanging out on this site making friends, you know, so that kind of risk comes from
And that site schoolforgoodandevil.com. And I assume once you're on that site, can you catch a glimpse of a trailer?
Absolutely. You got trailers for all three, and the trailers are quite popular because you'll see they're a bit darker than you'd expect.
All right, so you got this, and then the motion picture is being worked on now, and do you have visions beyond that?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to do another series, not fairy tale related, but, you know, still in the vein of questioning sort of modern culture. So great. I think that's probably going to be next, you know.
Sounds fascinating, and now people who weren't aware are aware of your writings and what's going to be happening on the big screen. It's a pleasure speaking to you. It's nice to speak to somebody that went to school for something and actually everything kind of just unrolled and unraveled right in front of them in a good way, and that's a great thing for you, and thank you so much for that. Again, it's schoolforgoodandevil.com where you can find that. The third and final in that particular series, is it out already?
Yeah, it just came out this morning.
Oh, like an hour ago?
Yeah, like an hour ago.
Okay, fine. Well, congratulations, have a drink, and great speaking to you, Soman.
Thanks so much, I really appreciate it.
Take care, bye-bye. What a nice man, bye. What a nice guy, huh? I'm so happy for him. He's successful. He's a successful man. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? The man actually became what he wanted to become. He actually is a winner. He's ended up doing what he wanted to do. Isn't that the secret of life? Making money at something that you really like doing? Isn't that what it's all about? I think so. I think that's what it's all about. That and sex.
Come on.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things.
I'm tired of talking about sex. Everything's got sex in it. Everything's sex-oriented. Everything. Look, people like Soman, people like you, you're all winners.
Here he comes. That's a winner. Here he
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the end of our show. I'll be with you next time around. Until then, I wish you peace.
Whatever.